landing in 1969 with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and all. And so I've had a connection to aerospace and also to this particular area from personal experience since I was a very young boy. And subsequent to that, I had some really extraordinary experiences following a near-death experience I had. I had an experience with an ET vehicle and a contact experience that lasted for a number of hours when I was 18. And so my interest is not just academic. I know for a certainty these things exist, and I know for a certainty that they are not hostile, and we know that the secrecy surrounding the issue is being run by an extra-constitutional and illegal operation.
I want to get into all that with you in a minute, Dr. Greer, but something piqued my interest about, you mentioned the lunar module, and Buzz Aldrin has just made some news saying they saw a UFO while they were on the moon. Did you ever hear about that?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've known this for some time, and certainly my people have worked with Buzz Aldrin, and you know, one of my supporters is a good friend with Neil Armstrong, and I've known for many years that when we landed on the moon that we were not alone, and that, in fact, the reason some of the footage that people have seen from the lunar landing looks hoaxed is because they knew prior to the landing that there would be ET vehicles very likely there because they had documented them around the Earth. And it's important to realize that during the lunar orbiter mission, which is different from the landing mission of the Apollo, the lunar orbiter, they were taking pictures and mapping the moon, that we have several top secret witnesses, one of whom is at Langley Air Force Base at a very classified National Security Agency operation there, where they were downloading images from the moon that showed structures and craft and artificial buildings that were already on the moon in the mid to late 60s prior to the lunar landing. So when we put the first man on the moon, we knew that there would be a very high likelihood of an encounter, and that's why some of what was transmitted back had to be, as it were, filtered, and was filtered so that people would not see that there were, in fact, ET craft that accompanied the lunar landing, the first landing of men on the moon. So this has been known in circles that I work with for quite some time, or actually since it happened, and we describe this in this new book that I have out, because I think it's important for people to understand that there's the real space program that's very classified and quote-unquote black, and then there's the space program that everyone hears about on CNN, which is, of course, just wind addressing and really space junk for the most part.
Yeah, I've been reading your book. It's a great read, by the way. One of the things I wanted to find out from you, I understand the extraterrestrial possibilities in the UFOs, but you're interested in an alternative energy systems as well, right?
Well, those are synonyms. I mean, what the alternative energy people don't understand, what the UFO people don't understand, is that the secrecy surrounding very major breakthroughs in energy and propulsion technologies that have to do with anti-gravity, electrogravitic systems, so-called zero-point free energy systems, and the secrecy around the UFO issue are two sides of the same coin. That basically, you know, no one in the business calls these things UFOs. They're either called ETVs, which is an extraterrestrial vehicle, which is what they've been calling at the National Security Agency and other operation centers, or they're called ARVs, which means alien reproduction vehicles, which are things that look like UFOs that are manufactured by Lockheed and Northrop and working with companies like SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, and a few other corporations who have dealt with this issue for many, many decades.
So back engineering is live and well.
It's not just back engineering, though, and this is another misunderstanding and part of the UFO sort of wastebasket of you know, lack of good analysis is, you know, yes, we, of course, have retrieved and studied extraterrestrial vehicles. People need to understand that all the way back in the 20s and 30s, there were tests being done by people like T. Townsend Brown. There were people who were in Germany working on things that dealt with resonance frequencies and crystalline structures of materials that resulted in a mass cancellation and a so-called anti-gravity effect. And so these things have been studied by humans. I point out to people the laws of the universe are, of course, universal, and there have been substantial breakthroughs in the human area. dealing with very significant energy and propulsion systems, which unfortunately have been kept secret for most of the last century because of the interests of big oil and the big financial system controllers, basically, who run planet Earth, and it's certainly not the people we elect to Washington. So I think that what people have to understand is that the secrecy surrounding so-called UFOs and the secrecy surrounding these major breakthroughs in energy and propulsion are one and the same.
Now, don't you have an energy and propulsion project yourself?
Yes, we are working. Since 9/11, we concluded that we needed to move disclosure, and of course DisclosureProject.org has, you know, hundreds of these top secret military and intelligence witnesses who come forward, that we needed to move from testimony and documents and that kind of evidence to building up to the extent that we can get the scientists to cooperate with us on this, some of these so-called zero-point or free energy systems, to be able to change the dynamics on the planet today, where essentially we're a terminal civilization that has no sustainable future because of the fact that we're completely dependent on fossil fuels and oil and gas and coal. And I think that this is why our next step in this whole effort, and we've made significant progress in the last year in identifying folks who do know about these sorts of alternative systems and who are working with us to begin to fabricate those. I would hope that in the next year or two we'd be able to actually come out with one of these systems. But a lot of the problems with this have to do with getting folks to step forward on something that they have been threatened to keep quiet on, but also, you know, funding issues. While there's lots of funding, we're spending $5 billion a year to study global warming. We're not spending anything to fix the problem. And this is of course, typical of the way folks want to manage this thing. You know, let's describe the problem. Let's not suggest any viable solutions. And what we're trying to say is, yeah, okay, we can describe the problem all you want, and it's been well described, and it's well known to everyone but the people who are ostriches with their heads in the sand. But what we really want to do is work on a civilian Manhattan-style project to get these energy and propulsion systems perfected and out to the public, and so they're not just sitting in black boxes at Lockheed Skunk Works and Northrop.
Are you making any progress?
Yes, we are, in fact, and I'm cautiously optimistic. I say that because, you know, the kind of heavy lifting one has to do on this issue is substantial, and we're trying to do a technical effort, and the big problem has been funding. If you study this area of energy and propulsion, the folks who have dealt with this have either been pulled into these classified projects in silence. Many of them have in fact been murdered or assassinated or threatened. The ones that are left are either timid or completely unfunded, meaning they're doing this in their basement or in their garage. And, you know, you're not going to start an entirely new science and energy sector with a few thousand or a few hundred thousand dollars. I mean, we really need to develop a line of funding that's in the $50 to $100 million range.
Yeah, when you go up against the energy companies, among others, as you mentioned, it's like a David and Goliath story.
Of course. I mean, these guys are sitting on a $200 trillion asset base if you look at the proven oil and gas and coal reserves that are around the world. And these are controlled by a handful of individuals and states and families. That's an enormous asset base. I mean, it's $200,000 billion worth of proven...
I need more than one calculator to get there.
Worth the entire financial system of the world, and the entire industrial westernized world is almost completely dependent on that. So, you know, you're talking about, and this is the thing I point out to people, you know, they're not keeping this whole issue secret because they're afraid people are going to hurl themselves off the Brooklyn Bridge because there's extraterrestrial life out there. They're keeping it secret because if they disclose the fact that the UFOs are real and that some of them are of extraterrestrial origin, it's going to come out that there are also ones that we have been studying and building, and that we do not need oil, gas, and coal. In fact, we also don't need the famous Eisenhower Interstate System that celebrated its 50th anniversary of this summer. We have not needed surface roads between cities since that system was conceived of in the 50s. We already had prototypes of these so-called electrogravitic and anti-gravity craft that were functioning. I have photographs of them from the early 60s flying over Provo, Utah, and they were man-made ones, by the way. So, entire area of industrial and financial military intelligence operations that are extremely secret. And one of the things